the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I was reading a very, very uplifting article recently about a tour to Israel that was undertaken by 350 Jewish mothers from around the world. And this is just hold your horses, because you're going to hear a little bit about it. I know what you're thinking.
Right.
But just if you listen out a second, this is a tour that was undertaken by a group called Momentum, which apparently is a global movement that is helping women to connect to their Jewish values and, of course, to the state of Israel. The women came from the U.S., from Canada, and from South Africa as well, I understand. But for the first time, also from France and Spain. So the tour was undertaken in three languages, French, English, and Spanish. Of course, touring around Israel, seeing most of the sites, also being able to meet with influential women in Israel, and of course, connecting to one another from around the world and talking a little about experiences that each woman actually has in their own local community, vis-a-vis their Jewish identity and, of course, their identity to Israel as well. And I think it's a great idea and one that really recognizes the importance of the mother's role in the household in terms of determining the way in which some of the family values are imparted to children. And I just wondered whether any of the listeners had participated on this tour and what they thought of it. I was reading it and I thought it was a really uplifting idea and a really great article that was written.
Yeah, I'd love to hear. 34519 or 0618951019. Stephen says it was a mother of all tours. Yes, it was certainly sounds like it was the mother of all tours. The government has managed to pass a more important bills in the Knesset in spite of not having an overall majority. What are the latest?
Yeah, so yesterday was a really tumultuous day in the Knesset. Obviously, Naftali Bennett doing whatever he can in order to lead what is effectively a minority government because he doesn't have an overall majority in the Knesset. So two main things happened yesterday. The first of which is that a bill was passed through the second and third readings and therefore into law to actually reduce taxes for parents of children between the ages of 6 and 12. And the idea is obviously to recognize the fact that those parents are having to bear increased cost in terms of educating their children and all the things that are associated with it. And in addition to some of the benefits that those parents have already enjoyed in terms of tax breaks in relation to children of that age. Yesterday, the law was passed that these parents will be entitled to a further approximately $5,000 a year discount on their taxes in order to try and help them to overcome the costs of educating and raising those children of those ages. And of course, the significant thing was that the government was able to pass this bill in spite of opposition from the opposing parties in the Knesset, and in spite of, as I said before, in spite of the fact that they don't have an overall overall majority in the Knesset to be able to pass bills like this, and yet they are somehow managing to function and managing to keep the government rolling. And I think that that's a very, very encouraging sign under the circumstances. In addition to that, we had a meeting yesterday of the Yamina faction of the Knesset, and the whole idea here is that one of the members of Yamina, Matan Kahana, has been serving as religious affairs minister, and due to the so-called Norwegian law system that works in Israel, the moment somebody is appointed as a minister, they are required to give up their Knesset seat in favor of the next person on the list of that particular party. Now, in the case of Matan Kahana, when he gave up his Yamina seat, the person who took over the seat is now somebody who is teetering on the edge of whether he may or may not support the government, and is considered to be something of a risk, particularly in view of the fact that the government has only got 60 seats in the Knesset that support it. And so with the coordination of Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, it was decided that Matan Kahana would resign as Religious Affairs Minister. He would then retake his Knesset seat back again in order to oust that particular individual who took his seat and who's looking a little bit shaky in terms of supporting the government. So Matan Kahana will be back in the Knesset again. And then the idea is that he would be appointed Deputy Religious Affairs Minister, which would allow him to effectively take the role of the minister, but without the title, to give him the ability to continue to keep his Knesset seat, and therefore just to prop up the strength of the government. And in the process of having to do all of this business, the Yamina faction met, and of course Idit Silman, who is that rebel member of Yamina, who decided that she was no longer going to support the government. She turned up at the Knesset, at the faction meeting of Yamina, and actually when was called upon to support the idea of Matan Kahana returning back to the Knesset, she decided not to support it. She also didn't oppose it, but she decided not to support this. And apparently this angered Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who evicted her from the faction meeting and asked her to leave the faction meeting, and also raised the prospect that she might be heading towards being one of those people who's considered to be a traitor. And if she is considered to be a traitor and officially ruled upon as such, then that would prevent her from standing in the Likud list in the next Knesset. She wouldn't then be allowed to stand for any of the existing parties in the Knesset in the next election. So she is really trying to tread a very middle ground, not annoying Yamina too much. And I think that her idea, and certainly the idea of the Likud, would be to try somehow to recruit her to stand for the Likud for the next Knesset. And everybody's looking already towards the next Knesset. So she's trying to be very, very cautious in her approach. Naftali Bennett, however, is having none of it. And there is an increased risk that she might have well have done herself damage in terms of being able to stand next Knesset for the Likud, which is what is speculated she would want to do.
Really, really interesting. An IDF soldier who was killed more than 3 years ago has had his name released for publication. Why did it take why 3 years?
Well, I don't exactly know why they've decided to release his name now, and what's happened over the last 3 years that makes it more acceptable now than was the case 3.5 years ago. But it is obvious why his name wasn't released at the time that he was killed. And this is a very, very fascinating story from a military perspective and from a personal point of view, surrounding Lieutenant Colonel Mahmoud Kir el-Din, who was a Druze officer in the military intelligence, obviously with a very senior rank of lieutenant colonel. And the story that surrounds his death in Gaza in November 2018 was that story. I'm not quite sure how many of the listeners will remember, but this was an undercover operation where soldiers who were hidden from view by from being IDF soldiers, in other words, they were actually dressed up as locals and operating in Gaza, were apparently driving through Khan Yunis in a car when they were stopped and they were questioned by Hamas operatives. And as the questioning progressed, the Hamas men became more and more suspicious about who this group of undercover operatives really were, and apparently began to suspect that they may well be IDF soldiers operating undercover. And at some point, the commanding officer of the group of Israeli soldiers decided that the only way out would be to open fire against those Hamas operatives who were questioning them, which is what he did. He took that decision by himself. And in the process of opening fire, he killed Mahmoud Kir el-Din, and he also hit another of the Israeli soldiers in that undercover group. So Mahmoud Kir el-Din was actually killed by friendly fire in that particular incident. The team then managed to escape back to Israel. Their names were not released at the time for publication. It was all relatively hush-hush. He was then only referred to as Lieutenant Colonel Mem, obviously using the first letter of his name, Mahmoud. The other individual, the Lieutenant Colonel, who was responsible for leading this group, is still not identified to this day. He's simply called Lieutenant Colonel Aleph. We don't know who he is, and we don't know what happened. But one of the interesting things was that in spite of that botched raid, those individuals in Khan Yunis at the time were apparently doing some incredibly important and highly sensitive work, such that members of that group were awarded special citations for the work that they'd done in general, but in particular for that particular botched raid, the work that they were doing at the time, which didn't succeed, but yet was so important that it was considered that they would get citations and commendations. Three members of the team received commendations, including one posthumously to Lieutenant Colonel Mahmoud Kiraldin. He was apparently an individual who was very, very active in his local community in the Khurfesh, which is the northern Druze town where he lived with his family. He held a BA in law from the College of Management of Academic Studies in Rishon LeZion, and he held an MA in education and business management from the University of Haifa. He was very involved in a non-profit organization helping to advance the Druze community in Israel and helping towards IDF enlistment for the Druze community. So this was a real loss to the state of Israel. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has come out saying that he eulogized Lieutenant Colonel Mem at his funeral, but now he's able to talk publicly about the man that he really was. And this is someone who was a real Israeli hero.
Incredible. Really, really just it's a bit of a Fowder kind of a story, isn't it?
It's just an amazing story. First of all, the operation that they were involved with, which we still don't know much about, but in fact, it caused quite a ripple through the IDF at the time, because as a result of the failure of that operation, the head of the Military Intelligence Special Operations Division resigned, and it led to some other changes in personnel. And yet the team themselves, who failed to accomplish their mission, were highly recommended for the work that they'd done. And Mahmoud Kiraldin in particular was commended, because apparently during that difficult moment when the Hamas operatives were about to discover that these were really Israeli operatives and not who they were pretending to be, Mahmoud Kiraldin was the calm, cool, collected guy who just continued the conversation, and who ultimately apparently delayed the firefight that ultimately took place by his just calm nature and the way that he dealt with the situation. So this is someone who's really been hailed as a massive hero 3.5 Incredible. Years after he died.
Amazing. President Herzog led Israel's delegation to the funeral of the President of the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi on Sunday. How will his death affect Israel's relations with the UAE?
Well, obviously, Israel's peace agreement with the UAE was signed during the time of his tenure as president. But let's not forget that he had hardly been operating as president over the last 8 or so years, because he'd suffered a stroke. We're talking about Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed, who passed away over the, late last week, and he was buried over the weekend. So he had, although officially was entitled as the president of the UAE and the ruler of Abu Dhabi, in fact, he hadn't really been operating in that role due to the stroke that he had suffered. And it's his half-brother, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, who's really been operating as the de facto president of the United Arab Emirates. And so he was very quickly on Saturday formally elected as the president, the new president of the United Arab Emirates. And so as far as operations, as far as relations with Israel go, we're not expecting any change at all. Obviously, everything that's happened up until now, even though formally under the rule of Khalifa bin Zayed, has really been the influence of his half-brother Mohammed, who has been operating in that role. the president of Israel flew for the day to Abu Dhabi to attend the funeral and to bring Israel's condolences to the royal family and to the president, the presidential palace of the United Arab Emirates. President Herzog was also accompanied by another a number of other Israeli ministers in order to bring their condolences. And apparently also a Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas was present at that particular funeral. So we didn't hear about any meetings that might have taken place between the Israeli delegation and the Palestinian Authority delegation, although we do know that President Herzog has in recent months had the opportunity to meet with the Palestinian Authority president. So we know those meetings have taken place, even though Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has formally refused to meet with Mahmoud Abbas since he's taken office as Prime Minister. So in terms of Israel's relations with the United Arab Emirates, no change. Everything will continue as has been the case before. But now, instead of acting as a caretaker, as a de facto president, he's now formally been appointed, that is Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed. And so I think it will simply be business as usual in terms of the way that things go between Israel and the United Arab Emirates.
Anthony, has there been any follow-up on the incident around the funeral on Friday?
Nothing more has been reported, and I think, to be honest, that the Israeli government is just trying to lower the whole temperature about everything that happened at the funeral on Friday. There has been a further incident in Jerusalem when one of those individuals who was involved in some of the Temple Mount protests a few weeks ago died as a result of his injuries, and the funeral was held yesterday in Jerusalem. There was certainly some protesting, and there was some violence. A few Israeli security officers were injured as a result of items that were thrown at them, and it shows us what might have been had the funeral on Friday got out of control. So to some degree, we can understand why the security forces wanted to be there and wanted to control things and wanted to take a firm handle on events on Friday. Nothing more has been said or done as far as I'm aware. And I think that this is just something that, at least from the Israeli government perspective, they're just going to try to allow the dust to settle. Yeah. But obviously, we haven't heard the last word on that. And I have little doubt that our friends in the Palestinian Authority and elsewhere are going to certainly try to keep that in the limelight as much as they can. But from an Israeli perspective, the less that's said about it now, the better. I don't think that Israel can come out of this looking good in any way. And so therefore, the idea is just to try and keep it as quiet as possible.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.